You're listening to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, the show that proves no one stumbles upon success ever. With your host, Lou Need. Every Mondays and Thursdays, we deliver cold hard evidence behind the power of a robust morning routine. Get ready to be transformed by the renewal of your mind.
Hello, morning enthusiasts. Welcome to the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast. I am your host, Looney Lewis, and today I have the privilege of introducing a very phenomenal man, the man of the hour, Paul Moore. After graduating with an engineering degree and then an MBA from Ohio State, Paul entered the management development track at Ford Motor Company in Detroit. After 5 years, he departed to start his staffing company with a partner. They sold it to a publicly traded firm 5 years later for, get it, $2.9 million. Along the way, Paul was finalist for Ernest Young's Michigan Entrepreneur for 2 years straight, back in 96 and 97. Paul later entered the real estate sector where he flipped over 50 homes and 25 high-end waterfront lots. He has appeared on HGTV's House Hunter while starting two successful online real estate marketing firms. Paul is the author of The Perfect Investment, Create Enduring Wealth from the Historic Shift to Multifamily Housing. Paul is also the co-host of the podcast, How to Lose Money, a wealth building show. Paul is a true servant, for he has set up his company to generate funding to fight human trafficking across the country. Paul, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Lanine.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you on the show. Today, we will discuss the secret used by the super wealthy to attain and maintain their wealth over generations. And I'd like to know why I am not invited to their party.
Okay, great.
Yeah, and then we'll discuss how to set up your how you have set up your company to generate funding to fight human trafficking and why human trafficking is so important to you. And then we'll talk about why is it so important for investors, entrepreneurs to find their big why. So let's start there. What is the secret used by the super wealthy to attain and maintain their wealth?
Well, you know, Lenny, when I was younger, I drove around and I saw these abandoned, beautiful malls that were abandoned, almost abandoned, like 20 years later. Now they have the DMV and a flea market. And I saw these buildings that were booming in the 50s around Detroit. But, you know, in the 90s, they were, you know, half empty. And I thought commercial real estate investing was a real bad idea. But what I didn't know is almost all the Forbes 400 largest, wealthiest Americans invest in commercial real estate. Now, if you had a house and you were like Chip and Joanna Gaines Jr. and you were able to take a $300,000 house, add $500,000 of beautiful upgrades, you know, you had $800,000 in it, but you're in a $300,000 or $400,000 neighborhood, you're never going to get your money out of that. We all know that because residential real estate is based on comparables or comps. But right. Commercial real estate is based on an income stream. And it allows us to force appreciation and allows us to basically force the value of the asset and even leveraged value of the equity to go up. It's because it's based on a value equation. And in summary, the value equation is the value of the asset is the net operating income divided by the rate of return or the cap rate. And if you can increase the numerator, the income, and possibly even compress the denominator, the cap rate, you can dramatically increase the asset value. And then with leverage, you can even more so increase the value of the equity, the investor's stake in this. So commercial real estate investors make a lot of money and generate a lot of multi-generational wealth. And I say multi-generational because often commercial real estate is probably the second most tax advantaged asset class behind oil and gas, which is much, much riskier than commercial real estate. Commercial real estate's predictable, it's stable, it's transparent. However, it's not real liquid. It's not something you can just jump in and out of when you want. So people need to take that into account when they make investments like this.
I was just going to ask you, is it lucrative?
It is very lucrative. It's very lucrative. It's not liquid. In other words, that you can't jump in and out whenever you want, like stocks and bonds.
So you've gone from commercial real estate to multifamily investing.
Well, so commercial real estate, in my mind, includes large-scale multifamily. It includes self-storage. It includes mobile home parks and other asset classes as well. Those are the three that my company focuses on, though.
So how have you went from $2 million in the bank to $2.5 million in debt a decade later during the recession? How did you end up debt-free a little over a year later?
It's a crazy story. I didn't understand, Lanie, the difference between investing and speculating. You know, investing is when your principal is generally safe, and speculating is when your principal is not at all safe, but you have a chance to make a return in either case. Well, I was a speculator, but I believed I was investing, but I was taking these large risks, and those risks really caused a lot of problems. And so I found myself, I was investing in all this real estate around a waterfront, basically waterfront lots around Smith Mountain Lake in Virginia. And I had a lot of debt in late 2007, about $2.5 million in debt with a partner. And my partner came to me and said, I can't bear this anymore. The interest is killing me. I can't make half the payments. I'm done January 1st, 2008. And so he signed all the assets over to me, and I was left with the full debt load. Thank you. And by the way, we're still good friends today. But anyway, I was sitting, you know, speaking of morning routine, I was sitting in my leather chair one morning and I was meditating, and I do that almost every day. And I was wondering to myself, what would George Mueller do? Now, George Mueller was a hellion in Germany in the early 1800s, and he went to England, and he became a pastor and a missionary to England, and he eventually started a whole bunch of large orphanages that housed over 10,000 orphans during the next century. Now, George Mueller didn't believe in debt. He didn't believe in asking for money, but yet he raised about $200 million in today's dollars, and possibly more than that in his lifetime, just through his faith. And so I thought, what would George do? And I thought, well, first thing is he wouldn't be in debt. Well, I was already in trouble on that point. But also, George was known for doing radical things and taking big, big leaps of faith. And so I thought, well, I think George would give his way out of debt. So I journaled that as part of my meditation in the morning. And then I went and told my friends who were encouraging me to declare bankruptcy, as well as my wife and four kids. I said, hey, we're going to give our way out of debt.
Yeah, that's foreign.
And that went over really well. That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Nobody's going to respond well to that one.
Right. So January 1st, 2008. Now, remember, we didn't know we were about to plunge into the worst recession since the Great Depression. We thought, you know, maybe the worst is over in 2007. And that wasn't true at all. But in January 2008, we started to give an aggressive amount of money every week to nonprofits we cared about, to our local church, et cetera. And as we gave, it was hard, but we did it every week. And 4 weeks later, I was at a Subway restaurant and I was talking to a real estate developer there. And I said, hey, I've got this 5-acre piece of land. I'd love to divide it into 5 waterfront lots. That was my plan, but I'm not allowed to because of zoning. And he said, oh, you ought to try this. And he told me about a law that allows subdividing under certain conditions. And I said, oh, no, I know all about that law. It won't work. And here's why. And I told him. And right about that time, a light bulb went off, Lanie. And the light bulb in me was, oh, wait, what if I turned that law around on its head and I used it in my favor to subdivide this into 5 lots. And so 2 days later, I was in front of the Planning and Zoning Commission in Bedford County, and I was explaining this really, really wild, crazy plan that I had come up with. And the lady looks at me up over her glasses and says, I've been working here for, I don't know how long, decades, and I've never heard of anybody come up with such an outrageous plan to subdivide land. But then she smiled and said, you're right. You found a loophole in our law and no one else has ever seen it. And she said, you can do this. And so I subdivided the land into 5 lots. And in the very height of the recession, that September, October, I sold 4 of those 5 lots. And you know what, Lanie? 13 months later, after we started giving aggressively in January 2008, I was 100% debt-free, including my personal residence.
Wow. You asked the right question. And then the universe provided an answer for you.
Yeah, it was crazy.
And continues to open doors. And I love the leap of faith that you took in giving back to charity. What are some of the charities that you gave to, and are you still doing so today?
Yeah, so I am a follower of Christ, and so we were giving money to our local church. We were also giving money to relief organizations and mission organizations in third world countries that are, you know, doing work among the poorest of the poor throughout the world.
That's fantastic. Ask, you shall receive. Seek, you shall find. Knock, and the door will be open to you.
Right.
Precisely what happened to you. This is phenomenal. After life as a serial entrepreneur, you've started multitude of businesses, over 20 plus businesses in just the last 20 years. Why didn't you end up devoting your life to multifamily investing?
Well, I want to say, first of all, that the wealthiest, most successful people in the world that I know of started at a young age with one clear direction. And they said yes to that one thing, and they said no to 100 or even thousands of distractions. I failed at that through my 20s, 30s, and even 40s. As a serial entrepreneur, I used to want to have that on my business card. And now I realize that wasn't a good way to operate. It would be better if I realized at a young age what I'd wanted to do. Of course, it's too late for that now, but I really recommend to young people, if they can get a real clarity on what they're supposed to do, to stay focused on that one thing. And I recommend to people that I mentor and to my own son that you should consider commercial real estate because of the reasons I laid out before. When I realized the demographic shifts in the U.S., and I could go into more detail if we had time, that were out there, that I realized that, wow, multifamily, apartment investing, apartments are perhaps the perfect blend of risk and return, high return and low risk. And there's something called the Sharpe ratio, which is S-H-A-R-P-E, that bears that out. And it shows that multifamily, self-storage, mobile home parks, and other commercial real estate have a far, far more favorable Sharpe ratio than other asset classes. And that's basically the return is high and predictable, and the risk is low, which means the ups and downs swing far less than the S&P 500, private equities, the Dow Jones Industrial Average, etc. So that's where I'm hanging my hat. And I recommend that people find one thing like that to focus on for their life.
Yeah, clear direction is key. And I read the book by Gary Keller. It's called The One Thing. And it talks about that. What is the one thing that you can do that will make everything else unnecessary or easier?
That's right.
And your laser focus is key. It shows that you found it, yeah, to the trial and error, and then you found it later on in life. But once you did found your one thing, you focused on it, because where energy goes, or where you're focused, that's what grows.
Yeah, that's right. That's absolutely right. And that's my favorite business book, by the way. I'm looking at it right now, and it's the one that guides my business life more than anything else.
Yeah, same here. I love that book, and I keep it handy, and I've read it several times. Very, very key components in there. So let's talk about that book a little bit. There's a section on it that talks about willpower is not at will. Mm-hmm. You recall that?
Yeah, I do. I do.
And so it talks about that you have a limited willpower when you do rise in the morning. And so you have to make the best decisions in the morning when it is fresh and at its optimum.
Yeah, that's right. You know, Brian Tracy's got a book called Eat That Frog, and he talks about doing the hardest things when you have the most willpower as early in the day as possible. And I agree.
100% for multifamily investors. So how do multifamily investors partner with the IRS to reap significant profit while paying virtually no taxes? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I had a friend who was involved in commercial real estate for decades, and he said, I can show you how you can take $20 million and invest it over 20 years. And over that 20 years, the first 10 years, you reinvest all the profits. And then the second 10 years, you take $131 million in profits. And at the end of the 20 years, in addition to taking out $131 million, you'll have a portfolio of about $210 million. Remember, this started with only $20 million. And so I thought that was crazy. But you know what? Lanid, he had the math to prove it. But he said something even more shocking after that. He said, and this investor, if they played their cards right along the way, it's possible that they paid virtually zero in taxes all along the way on income or capital gains. That's really shocking. But the IRS has made it so, I mean, I should say our government has made it really powerful to invest in real estate, especially commercial real estate. And there are about 13 or 14 different strategies to save money on real estate investing. In fact, I did a seminar on April 15th, tax day, when lots of people were down and sad, about why commercial real estate investors are really often very happy that day. And we went through those 12 or 13 or 14 different tax saving strategies.
And ways to save money, because it's a long, you're in it for the long haul. And you know, if you're reinvesting for the first 10 years, it's good to start young.
Right.
Because then you can see that grow later on.
Yes. Very true.
Your book is called The Perfect Investment. And I want you to talk a little bit about your book and how we can get a copy of the book. You told me offline that there's really not a perfect investment, right? So why do you say that?
So the book's called The Perfect Investment, which is about reaping the rewards of this historic demographic shift toward apartment dwelling and multifamily investing. When the reason I call it The Perfect Investment is it's got such a great blend of return versus risk, and you can see down the road for decades and figure out what your likely success could be in apartment investing, because you can see the population trends for decades to come. I mean, we know how many people have been born in the last 10 years in Generation Z, and you know, we know that on average there are going to be so many apartment dwellers in, you know, X number of years ahead. So it's a great investment. The reason the perfect investment is not so perfect right now, however, is that lots and lots of people have caught on to this. I'd like to think it's because they read my book, but the truth is multifamily investing has just become overly popular. People are making irrational decisions, paying too much for apartments. And by doing that, they're putting themselves in a place where they're in a very high risk situation because they're tolerating low returns and low margins of safety. And at times when many multifamily investors should be selling and waiting for a market correction, a lot of them are still buying. I even heard one very famous multifamily guru say, it doesn't matter if you overpay, just get in, because apartment investing will make you money over time. Well, that's exactly the opposite advice of people like Warren Buffett. And my money's on Buffett here. I'm sitting on the sidelines. We're investing in self-storage and mobile home parks right now while we're waiting to see if multifamily softens a little bit, maybe a lot.
Yeah, trailer park homes, that's a big investment right there, getting the whole lot and getting that residual income.
Yes, that's right. In fact, that's what I'm studying right now. Did you know 44,000 mobile home parks in the U.S., almost 40,000 of those are owned by small mom and pop operators, and they don't really often run them really professionally. Some of these are in the path of growth and can be acquired and upgraded and make a better situation for the residents, a great return for the investors. And it's the only asset class we know of, Lanid, where there is actually a shrinking supply of mobile home parks every year, but yet an increasing demand.
Yeah, I read that. And it's the new investment. It's the new thing because it's so cheap, right? You can get a 2-3 bedroom for under $1,000 in a mobile home and be able. So it's tailored to the working class.
Yes, it is. That's right. And of course, we all know that, I mean, I made $11 in summer jobs, three separate summer jobs back when I was out of high school and into college. I made $10.50 to $11.50 an hour. I know college grads with a 4-year degree coming out of school, 30 what would it be, 33 years later now, making that same amount of money or even less. There is certainly an affordable housing crisis. Did you know that 10,000 people a day turn 65 and two-thirds of them have less than $10,000 saved for retirement? Many of those people are going to end up by choice or by necessity in mobile home parks.
Yes, and also depending on the government to bail them out.
It's absolutely true.
I find it brings back to purpose and finding a reason, finding a way to give back and add value to other God's children, because God, you have to be able to create, right? There is no competition if you're in the creating mode. You're creating ways to give out your talents and give out your gifts, but also doing the work for God's kingdom.
That's right.
So I want to get into, a lot of people miss that. A lot of people can't find their purpose, can't find that desire, can't find their why. Mm-hmm. They don't have a big enough why to motivate them to get them going into finding a way to create, not just for themselves, but create a life that help other people grow, serves other people. So tell us about your why and how you got involved with human trafficking.
I made like $2 million. Like we talked about earlier, in the fall of 1997, I was only 33 years old. And the next morning when I woke up with that money in my bank account, I wasn't one bit happier than the day before. And I think we all know in theory that, but when the rubber meets the road, you've got to realize that you want to have a bigger purpose in life. You've got to have a bigger reason for being on the planet. Did you know that if you took the record profits, and I don't mean the average, I mean the record profits of Nike, Starbucks, General Motors, and Apple, took those record profits, combined them, doubled that number, that's the approximate annual revenues generated by human trafficking in the world. Well, this is
really
not okay. Yeah, I'd like to believe that if I was alive in the 1800s, I would be an abolitionist fighting against slavery. And I'd like to believe that if I would have been an adult in the 1960s, I would have been fighting for civil rights. Well, this is a civil right. It's been ripped away through enslavement of tens of millions of people, and it's not okay. And so I decided that our company, Wellings Capital, would do whatever we could to promote this message and get the word out and to fund fighting this great evil and rescue the victims of this tragic situation.
It is really sad to hear. Absolutely. Human trafficking is really, we are in this era. This is our fight, right? It's not just, it's them, and then don't worry about it. Like you said, if you were back in the day, there was a different civil rights movement going on, you would partake in that. And I urge everyone to be mindful of what's going on in our country, around the world.
Yes, it's true.
What is your big why to give back? What does that look like?
My big why is, again, to just promote this message and tell people about this great evil, and to just fund and get people funding the fighting of this great evil and to rescue the victims of human trafficking. That is one of my major big whys that I have in my life.
You are a true servant leader. I appreciate you and all that you do, Paul.
Thanks, Lanid.
You spoke briefly about your morning routine. You were meditating and you got the big aha moment. You asked the big question. You were able to get answer. When you asked what George Mueller was doing, you meditate. I know that. So tell us more about your morning routine. How do you get inspired to get up, dress up, and show up and do what you do?
Yeah. So, I mean, the last 4 days I've got up. I don't always do the same thing, but I got up. I listen to a podcast or a sermon while I jump on my mini trampoline, which is great exercise, by the way. And it's not too hard. It's actually fun. And I also, after that, I pray, I read the Bible. When I'm on a good day, I'm journaling, I'm trying to journal. And that's when I really get the most bang for my buck in the morning, my meditation combined with journaling. I also do declarations out loud about my life, who I am, who I want to be. And that's pretty much how I start my day. That takes a while.
Yeah, declarations, they're affirmations, like I am a child of God, you know, no weapon formed against me shall prosper.
Right.
I love that. You need that affirmation because we are just bombarded with negative thoughts. And so it's easy for for those to take over,
right,
especially early in the morning. So it's good to speak against it. And I do affirmations as well. And I tell my listeners the importance of reframing your mind.
Yes.
Been thinking one way for over 30, 50 years. Now it's time to actually be diligent and be intentional in your thoughts, because they will shape you. They will transform your tomorrow.
That's right. That's right. Good. I love it.
The whole trampoline stuff. You know, Tony Robbins does that before his every performance. Now, he's not a performer, but motivational weekend.
I heard that. You know, I've never really checked into that, but I'm glad to hear you say that.
Yeah, that's how he gets the blood pumping. That's your exercising. And it's great. And Tony Robbins does the same thing. It is an easy, fast way to get the body moving.
Yeah, I agree.
And Paul, I thank you. You're a man of prayer. I'm a woman of prayer. I thank you for coming on the show. Tell us, how can we connect with you and get in touch with Wellington's Capital and also your book?
Okay, great. Well, my book, The Perfect Investment, is my second book on real estate investing. I've got a third one coming out about self-storage investing, but you can get The Perfect Investment on Amazon. You can also connect through our podcast. It's a wealth building podcast called How to Lose Money, howtolosemoney.com. And the main way to get hold of me is at my website, and that's wellingscapital.com, WellingsCapital, wellingscapital.com.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Paul, for coming on the show.
Okay. Thanks, Lanit. It's been a real honor and a pleasure. Have a great day.
Thank you. You as well.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, morning enthusiasts. That's it for today's show. Thank you for tuning in. If you love the Best Morning Routine Ever podcast, we'd love to hear from you. So go ahead and subscribe, rate, and give a review on iTunes or Google Play. While you're at it, tell a friend about the show. Be sure to visit bestmorningroutineever.com and our Facebook group to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic free bonus content. Until next time.